Well, how's it going, everybody? Welcome back to the show. 9:17 here on a Tuesday morning with JR and Hammer. Simmer's on holidays again this week. He'll be back on Monday. Jamie Baker was all day Baker yesterday. Morning show, pre- and post-game show. Guy needs some downtime, man. He'll be back again tomorrow morning here on the show. Okay, Sens are next up on Thursday, home to Philadelphia. That's also opening playoff game day for the 67s as they begin the playoffs versus Oshawa. And again, they're playing at the Slush Puppy Center in Gatineau. Games 1 and 2, and if necessary, Game 5 will all be in Gatineau because the World Curling Championship has taken over TD Place Arena. It's going to be a very busy weekend, actually, at the Slush Puppy Center because the 67s are playing on Thursday and Sunday, Games 1 and 2, and the Gatineau Olympique are playing Games 1 and 2 in their playoff series, their opening playoff series with the St. John Sea Dogs on Friday and Saturday. So we got a couple of really good junior hockey teams, both of which are hoping to win their league and potentially move on to the Memorial Cup. And right now joining us in the Gabriel Pizza Hotline is the head coach of the Olympique, Louis Robitaille. Comment ça va, coach? How are you doing this morning?
Ça va bien. Good morning. How are you guys?
Very well, thank you. Appreciate the time, and what I'm sure it's a very exciting time for you. First of all, congratulations on a great regular season. I know you made a lot of additions throughout the year to bolster your team. How surprised are you that this season turned out as well as it did, in retrospect?
Well, not really surprised, but, you know, obviously we didn't have the start that we expected in. We had a lot of injuries, and then with the World Junior, a few guys went there, like Zach Dean, Marcel Marcel. So it was a tough first half. We had to battle through lots, but I liked the way the guys stayed with it. And that's just put pressure on the GM, on me, to acquire the right pieces. You know, we've raised a great group of young guys. When we picked four guys in the first round a few years ago with Luneau, Varot, Savoie, Warren, you had Dean, Boutin, in that mix. So our core guys were raised here in Gatineau. That being said, we acquired Vinado at the draft, and now we just wanted to add the right pieces, and we were able to get guys like Riley Kidney, obviously, and Frankie Lapina, and that, which they've been used to us.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about the goaltending, and you can talk about this firsthand. It seemed to be uncertain to start the year, and then you added Lapina. How important was that aspect in terms of rounding out to what you hope will be a championship team?
Well, it's the key. You talk to any coaches, they're gonna say, "Well, name me a good goalie, I'll name you a good coach," right? So it's an important part of the game, especially in the playoffs. You're gonna need to win some games for us because we're not gonna play 16 perfect game if we want to go all the way to the championship. That being said, like Emeric Defensive was really good early on, and then he got injured. And that's where, both of our goalies went down. So we had to acquire Ty Austin, who played for Peterborough after his camp in the AHL. He did really well. He was banged up too with a few injuries. So that left a few question marks to this position. And that's where we made the move. And in our mind, we acquired the best goalie available. And Frankie has been not only a good goalie, but he's been a leader. He's a guy that lost last year in the final against Indianado and Shawinigan. So he came here with a chip on his shoulder. He wants to win. He's hungry, and that's exactly what we needed.
With the Gatineau Olympique head coach Louis Robitaille, they'll start the playoffs on Friday versus the St. John Sea Dogs. Do you remember a year in which the Quebec League had as many strong teams at the top as they do this year? And I know you gotta beat everybody eventually, but between Quebec and Halifax and Sherbrooke and yourselves, four teams that appear to be all of them championship caliber. Have you seen a season like this before?
No, not really. Not four teams who are stacked like that. And we can add Victoriaville in the mix with Brunet, the addition of Brunet and Veillette. They're a team that got 40 wins this year, 88 points. So it's gonna be an interesting playoff. There's gonna be no easy matchup, that's for sure. But I think the last time, JR, was really the year of the COVID. When COVID hit, I think Moncton were really good. That was Alexis Lafrenière last year, and Rimouski, Chicoutimi were good with the Adrien Pinard, Sherbrooke as well. So we kind of started seeing that tendency where a few teams were stacking for 1 year, right? You know, as you know, in junior, they're cycled. And compared to the OHL here, we're allowed to move those first round pick. So when it's time to go, the price are a little heavier. So that means you buy a little bit more. You want to give yourself a good chance to gain that trophy, because the acquisition that you're making doesn't guarantee any championship, but they rise your chances. To get there. But to have four or five teams like this in the regular playoff, I haven't seen that in a long time.
As you mentioned, you move some of your futures in terms of draft picks and younger players in an attempt to win it this year, which is kind of the cycle of junior hockey. Do you kind of look at it as in you got to do it this year, or have you left enough that potentially, depending on who's back next year, that you might have a chance again next year?
Well, we like our 04 group. Like I said, we have four elite first-round pick with Savoie, Vero, Luno, and Warren. Obviously, we would like to, if we want to go back next year, adding some depth, we're going to need to get two new European players. But as you know, in the cycle in juniors, when it's time, we're going to focus on this year. And if we have a shot next year, if we have some addition, I'll throw a name out there, Will Smith, who was our first round pick in the American draft. He ended up being drafted, let's say, by Ottawa at 10 overall, and they want to see him across the river. Well, that changed the dynamic of the team, right? So as you know, in junior, we want to go day by day, and we'll wait to see who's going to be the returning player next year.
Yeah, we don't want to get ahead of ourselves. Let's go through these this year's playoffs. I was over and watched your team play against the 67s in that two-game series about a month ago, and that was just really impressive. The two wins. The 67s are, during the regular season, the best team in the OHL. How much confidence did your group draw from that of going head-to-head with an OHL powerhouse and taking care of business?
Well, I think a lot of confidence. When you face a team that's ranked number one, we all know the rivalry between the two organizations. It's a good rivalry, right? The games were intense. They were playoff-type games. And I think it helped us to take the next step. Because there were some meaningful games. They meant a lot to us, to our fans. Buildings were packed, lots of emotion on the ice. So every time you have a chance to play those type of game, it's good for our club. But I thought the timing was really, was perfect. Talking to Cameron after, he said, well, to play these games in February, that helps, to make your last push before playoff, and you kind of know where your team stands. And for us, it was really good, and I think it gave confidence for the rest of the year for our players.
Talking to Louis Robitaille, head coach of the Gatineau Olympique. They'll start the playoffs on Friday versus St. John. Your team's got a lot of promise. There is, the prospect of winning the league and going to the Memorial Cup, but you got to win four rounds to get there. It's a long time. There may be no tougher hockey playoff to go through than the junior hockey playoff to get to the Memorial Cup. How do you keep your guys grounded to make sure their eyes aren't too far ahead of themselves in terms of this first round series with St. John?
I think the fact that we went on a streak where we had 22 wins in a row helped us, because it was always the next one. That's really the language we speak to: next game, next shift, next shot. It's to focus on the now instead of thinking about 2 weeks ago who we won or who are we going to face in 2 weeks. And I think the leadership group, guys like Nadeau that won last year, guys like Zach Dean that went to and won the gold with Team Canada, same thing with Luno and Warren that went to the Youth Olympic. So we have a lot of experience. Cam McDonald on our team was part of the St. John Sea Dogs last year, JR, and they lost in the first round. And there was a lot of promises to their team, right? They end up winning the Memorial Cup. So he went through that, and it's helping our young guys, or guys that they don't have the experience in the playoff. He can share, the path, and can help them to prepare and stay in the now. And I think our leaders have been great all year, so I don't see that being an issue.
You got a stacked team, but as we know, the playoffs at times becomes a war of attrition. Unfortunately, you lost one of your better defensemen, Noah Warren, to a season-ending injury a couple of weeks ago. What kind of impact do you think that'll have on your team?
Well, it's a big impact. You can't replace a player like him, but it's unfortunate. Injuries are part of the game, but it's tough to replace a top three defenseman with size, with grit. He was one of our best PK guy. But it's next man up. We like the depth of our group. We have guys, that are 19 years old as fifth and sixth defensemen. So they just got to take a little bit more minutes and cannot use that as an excuse. Everybody goes through that. And I was talking to Dave this morning. I think they lost their number one goalie. They were pretty banged up through the 67. And And one of the things is, I've learned with Hockey Canada and with Dave is, control the controllables. Be ready for anything. And at the end of the day, it's going to be our key play that's going to bring success to these playoffs.
All right, good stuff. It's been, you got a beautiful new rink there, and the response of the fans, I mean, for the past, several home games, there have been sellouts, 5,000 strong. Really feels like, the team and the organization has cut through over in Gatineau. What's it feel like for your guys to come out to sell out crowds now?
It's great. We can feel the buzz around town. I think with the last few years with the pandemic, it's been tough. And I think that our fans have been waiting for that kind of season. You look at the last few years there before I got here, guys, it was more of a rebuild, I'd say, here after Benoit Gou left for the pro rank. So everybody's excited. We have a beautiful facility, and I think the fans are really getting comfortable. We cannot duplicate the atmosphere that we had in Gatineau. Obviously, that old day, it was like, that vibe, eh, when you were going
oh,
to
yeah.
Gatineau.
Yeah.
It smelled, it was dark, you can see the banner, low ceiling. But now it's one of those new age building, and I think from the DJ on, from the people doing the animation, the fans, they're really able to bring kind of that vibe, that playoff vibe. In the last few games have been unbelievable, and we expect the same thing for our playoffs.
I'm old enough to remember going over there to the Bob and watching Jeremy Roenick and Marty Gelinas, and the blue smoke was so heavy that you couldn't even really see the ice in the third period.
Oh, I know. I played there as a visitor, Game 7 at Gatineau, and I think Monsieur Harry was. I don't know what he was doing. I think he was opening the door to let more people in.
Yeah.
It was so loud, so noisy, and I think they started throwing some golf balls on us. Like it was wild. It was a good old hockey, and that what made Gatineau special. The All Olympics when they won the Mem Cup at home as well. It was unique to play there in the playoff, and we want to, we want to bring that vibe right here in Slush Puppy. And I think this year is really the first year where we're going to have normal playoff, and I think everybody's excited about it.
No kidding. Absolutely. The passion of the Olympic fan is unmatched. We wish you the best of luck. Really appreciate the time today. The best of luck going forward, starting on Friday night versus St. John, and we hope to catch up with you a few times as the playoffs go on. Thanks for the time this morning.
Always a pleasure. Thanks, guys.
All right. There's Louis Robitaille, head coach of the Gatineau Olympique, joining us on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline. Gabriel Pizza is the official pizza of the Ottawa Senators. Yeah, these are kind of unprecedented times. Two major junior powerhouses, both right next door to each other, with the potential of winning the league and going to the Memorial Cup. So it should be a terrific, hopefully, next couple of months of playoff junior playoff hockey. In and around Ottawa and Gatineau. 9:30, we'll take a break, come back with much more. We'll talk about the Sens' big win last night over the Florida Panthers. They're off today, by the way, back on the practice ice tomorrow with the Philadelphia Flyers coming to town on Thursday. We'll have another code word for you and another chance for you to win 67's playoff tickets for Game 1. It's our all-day 67's playoff ticket giveaway. Your cue to call is coming up between now and 10 o'clock right here on TSN 1200.
Presents Bet and Breakfast, powered by FanDuel. Make every moment more on FanDuel, North America's number one sportsbook.
All right, we're back. Time for some picks. Time for some winning picks. We put this in the hens. First of all, Simmer, abject failure. Moved on to Hammer last week.
I did well.
Two good days, one terrible day, not even close day.
Okay, yeah.
So Jamie Baker stepped in yesterday. So he had, I know he had the over of 7.5. It was 7.5, and it ended up, of course, being under of 7.
He had the Sens.
Yeah, he had the Sens to win, so he had that.
And Batherson to score.
All right, which didn't happen.
Did
so he
happen.
Went 1-for-3, and our rule is three choices, you got to get 2 out of 3 right. I'm the only one that hasn't had a chance.
Here comes
to
the
do
big
this.
Talk. Here we go.
Okay? Here's what I'm thinking tonight.
What I'm actually, favorites are you taking here so you can keep yourself on the board?
I'm actually... Well, this has nothing... This is about winning. This is about wins. Okay?
Yeah.
There's a reason that the buildings in Vegas are as big as they are. Because people love the long shots. And the 8-way parlays. Okay? Just go with, if you need to, there's nothing wrong with the tried and true. Canada taking on Honduras tonight.
Soccer.
CONCACAF Nations League final qualifier at BMO Field in Toronto.
You're hitting the pitch?
I'm hitting the pitch. Okay? Canada's a huge favorite in this match.
Well, I knew that because you picked them.
They need a win or a tie to move on. Honduras needs a straight-up win to advance to the Nations League final in June in Las Vegas. So the Honduras has something to play for. Canada, if they want to, can play kitty bar the door and play for the draw if they so choose. But that's not in our Canadian DNA. We're out there to score goals. So I'm taking Canada on the money line, and I'm taking an over-under on the game. Total goals, I'm taking the over of 2.5. I think we're going to see some goals in this game. Because I think, listen, if Canada gets ahead like they should, Honduras is going to press, right? Because they need. So I think they're going to open up. We're going to see some goals. So I like 3 or more goals in this game. So that two-way parlay for 10 pays 10.56. Double your money. And my third choice, I'm going with Ottawa's own Jonathan David to score a goal. He's minus 115 to get a goal in tonight's game.
Minus?
Yeah.
Wow.
So I got Canada. I got a total of the over of 2.5 total goals. And I'm taking Jonathan David to get a goal.
I'm just thinking in any soccer match, when you bet on the goal scorer, it's going to be a plus. Only because you could have a nil-nil draw, right?
Mm-hmm.
Really easily.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that he's favored, that's
pretty
interesting.
Pretty close to even money. All right, there you go. There's your picks. There's your winners. Make every moment more on FanDuel, North America's number one sports book.
So are you saying mortgage? Go out there, hey, get the mortgage on this, on what I just
no,
predicted?
No, because slow and steady wins the race, which is what I advocate. Okay?
Well, kind of full of confidence here that this is the way to go. Make this happen.
Proof will be in the pudding tomorrow.
Again, I need to apologize for everybody for my picks on Friday with the Elite Eight and going 0-4. That was misery right there.
Okay, who won the 67's playoff tickets?
67 playoff tickets, our third and final pair for our show.
Yes.
Went to...
part of our 67's playoff ticket all-day giveaway. Ah, that didn't come out right.
Anthony Curry.
Nice job, Anthony. I'm going to call you Tony for the purposes of this.
His email is Tony.
All right. Nice job, Tone.
He's jacked, too. He can't wait.
Yeah.
He's pumped.
He knows he's going to the Slush Puppy Center,
he
right?
knows. I made sure to tell everybody that won, hey, it's not TD Place.
Yep.
You're going to Slush Puppy. It's going to be a blast.
Of the three people that won this morning, have any of them been to the rink? Did they say, oh, I haven't been there?
No, nobody said. I didn't ask either. I mean, it could have been three.
Are you not curious?
I don't have a lot of time.
Oh, my God.
If you had a co-host, I'd be able to, you know, dive deep into our listeners and find out what they're feeling and find out where they've been. I don't. Unfortunately, I gotta get their names and
all right.
Adios.
Fair enough. We're going to be giving away a pair of tickets all day long, right up until 5 o'clock this afternoon, for Game 1, which is Thursday night at the Slush Puppy Center. On Thursday, we're going to be giving away tickets all day to Game 2, which will be Sunday afternoon, also at the Slush Puppy Center. All right, so again, your next chance to win will come up sometime next hour with Steve Lloyd, Chris Stevenson, and Kenny Walls, voice of the 67s, on In the Box here on TSN 1200. You know what we haven't talked about, what we should talk about, because this clip went viral yesterday, of the umpire in the Blue Jays-Phillies exhibition game yesterday. I've only seen the clip. I haven't heard what anybody had to say, and I don't even know any of the context. I've only seen the clip. So this is all, so maybe you can
That's
add.
All we've got.
Okay. So you don't know if there's any.
There's no backstory yet that I've come across.
Okay. So what happened, for those that haven't seen it, there is a, was it a foul? Right?
Yep.
And it's a JT Realmuto, the Phillies catcher. So the ball's out of play. So he puts his glove and just kind of lays it, you know, behind his shoulder, yeah, as in, hey, umpy, hey, Blue, put the new ball into my glove here and I'll throw it back to the pitcher. And I guess it doesn't happen in quick enough and I oh so this is the one piece of context I do have. The last time similar situation happened, the umpy just threw it straight to the pitcher. So Realmuto puts his glove back, the ball doesn't immediately get put in it, so he takes it and kind of puts it back down again by his side at the same time as the umpy is going to put it in there, and so the ball ends up just getting fired into the ground, and the umpire, I guess, thinks that the Phillies catcher is showing him up, and
you're making me look bad.
He throws him out of the game. It's outrageous. And I don't know if there's anything else, whether they had been jawing throughout the game. I can't think in Grapefruit League baseball that you're going at it. And I think it was early in the game, too, wasn't it? And I don't know if there's a history between this particular umpire.
But even
this
if
catcher.
There's history, it's got to, as an umpire, as an official in any sport, you need short-term memory. You can't let something carry over and go, hey, if this guy did, because of the last game, he was talking crap to me. And so if he does anything this game, boom, he's out of here. Umpires in baseball, they're a little thin-skinned. Their egos, they're a little too trigger-happy in throwing people out, and we've seen that the last couple of seasons. So I'm not too sure if that's something they've been told by their union. Hey, if anybody gives you grief, see you later. We've kind of seen that a little bit in the NBA, too, a lot of technicals. You're not allowed any talk back whatsoever. Well, you're allowed a little bit, but, hey, to a certain degree, not as much as the past. And here in baseball, you're seeing the same thing. It was ridiculous to see this ball drop.
It was outrageous.
And
it made
that toss.
It made that umpire look so bad. And, again, I think most people were like me. They just saw that highlight and kind of went, what the heck is going on there? Like, that makes no sense, and he looks so bad in that, again, without knowing the context, but I think it sounds like there wasn't a whole heck of a lot that was leading up to him having the you-know-what fit that he ended up having.
Well, it's not like, and Real Motu's reaction was, it's not like, yeah, I got you, sucker. That ball hit the ground. No, it was like, what are you doing here? Why am I getting tired? That's an honest mistake.
Somebody just texted in and said the pitcher had just gotten a time violation. A pitch clock violation, I guess, previous to that, which, again, I don't know what that has anything.
That's nothing on the catcher.
Well, maybe he's jawing about, I don't know, the call or whatever. Again, just in and of itself, if you just watch the video and you don't have any, it's a terrible look.
I'm hoping at least they learn from this. Like, just don't let this get past the umpires. Let's at least get something out of this and learn from it, because that umpire looked like a complete fool.
It just showed to me that the umpire, the players, like me, were all sick of exhibition baseball. Let's move on to the real thing. Which starts on Thursday. Yeah, today's the last day of games, I believe, exhibition games, because the real thing starts on Thursday.
Jays are done. They're
playing today.
I thought they flew out or something. Packed their bags and see you later. Maybe they're on the road or
something. They're at the Phillies. Yesterday was the last game in Dunedin.
So they packed Dunedin.
So they're at the Phillies today, and then they're on to St. Louis on Thursday. And Alek Manoah, as we found out, will be the opening day starter.
How's this for an opening season road trip for the Blue Jays? They start in St. Louis, this equal schedule now, which I find ridiculous. Anyways, they start.
What do you mean equal schedule?
They're playing every single team in the NL, the American League, which is cut down. And I didn't need 19 games. Against your AL East opponents, but not, what is it, nine or 10 that they've got, three series against your AL East opponents. So now you're playing every team, home and away. So their opening schedule here for the Jays is they're in St. Louis.
Very good team.
Then they head to KC.
Not so good team.
And then they hit the West Coast to play the Angels, and then they're back home.
Well, part of the reason they're starting out with and St. Louis to Kansas City, obviously,
it's
geographically.
It's not the three games on the road. It's just how you're traveling through and hitting the West Coast for only one series.
Yeah, that does
which
seem
means
dumb.
You're going right back out there for an extra trip. I would imagine now they would probably have four trips out west, including that three game set against the Angels.
Well, okay, I had forgotten the fact that they're playing home and away against the National League teams.
I'm pretty sure. Yep.
Okay, so if they're doing that, then they're obviously making additional trips out to the West to play the National League teams as well, because in and of itself, going out to play one American League series in California with two other teams in the West doesn't make sense. But if you've got National League teams to play, then, okay, you can tie all that in. Makes a little bit more sense. Now, the reason that they're starting, and I'm again guessing, but I think pretty good guess on this, is that they Jays wanted as much time as possible with all the construction that went on at the Rogers Center in the offseason, where they have completely redone the outfield this offseason. And then next offseason, so at the end of this coming season, they're going to be redoing all the seats from the foul lines into behind home plate. But they've redone everything in the outfield. It's going to be a whole new look when they do eventually get back home. But they wanted as much time as possible to make sure, you know, with construction delays or whatever might happen, that it was good to go. And my understanding, and because they've done video from inside, right, they've shown
looks pretty neat.
I think
looks pretty cool.
Things are pretty,
the
pretty
high good. Bullpen.
So the bullpen is up. The walls are higher. The walls have been brought in, but the walls are higher. And the bullpens have been raised now to the level of the fans in the first
cool.
row. So, yeah. Now you're going down for
I'm
opening
there.
Day.
I got opening day. My son, myself, and my brother-in-law.
Your son, old Moneybags, sends season ticket holders. He's 16.
Disposable income.
What's he work at? I thought he was like a cook.
This is what you get for having zero free time, because you play baseball, you go to school, and you work. But when you've got some time off, you take some time off. And what you do with it is you go to sporting events. That's what he does. So we've got.
Is he actually going to school? Is he doing any homework? How does he have time to do any of that?
He is going to school.
Full-time baseball player, full-time season ticket holder for the Sens now. Apparently goes to school.
He does.
And now he's going opening day for the Jays.
Do you think a guy, me, is going to let somebody in my family not go to school? He goes to school. Now, he also has half-day co-op, too, with the Ottawa Titans. So he's got a little extra baseball there, too, learning behind the scenes. All but right. We're going to be right there. 200 level in left field, so we're going to be kind of beside the new sections that were just refurbished.
So you're down the left field line?
Yeah.
200 level?
200 level.
Okay.
And then we'll see the bullpen right there.
What day of the week do they open at home?
Tuesday. Mm. A nice Tuesday nighter.
Is that right after the long weekend or a week after that?
What's Easter weekend? Is that the first and the second?
Well, no, this 7th is April. And 8th.
So, yeah, this is right after Easter weekend. This is the 11th. Home opener, April 11th.
Wow.
Get after it. So, boss man, I'm going to send you an email.
You taking another day off?
I'm going to need that Wednesday off.
Does anybody work around this place?
I'll be here on Tuesday, but I'm not going to be back here on Wednesday.
You're going to the Jays opener. You just went to Florida. AJ's at Wrexham, and then he was at the
nobody has
Ukraine,
anything to say except for AJ.
England soccer game.
He was gone for 6 weeks, comes back for 2 months, and then he's gone again. Nobody's got a better schedule than Ajax.
Who runs this place?
That's what a lot of us are asking that work here.
Guy's a good. All I know is that whoever that guy is, what a good guy he is, man. I'd like to work for that guy. He's a good guy.
Hey, we get little surveys here at work that we got to fill out and that ask questions about the big boss. You should be getting rave reviews from AJ, I'll tell you that.
There you go. Okay, so that's a baseball. Talked about the soccer. So I'm flipping around after the Sens game last night, and I watched the end of the Montreal-Buffalo game. We asked about that. It seemed like, even though it was in Buffalo, it felt like a Habs home game. I have no idea. Still don't know if Hab fan out there can tell me why there were so many Montreal fans in Buffalo last night. I understand that the Habs have a fan base right across the country of Canada, which is right across the border from Buffalo.
We haven't seen it that bad in Buffalo.
I don't remember it being like it was. And again, it's the end of the year, and Montreal's been terrible for most of the year. And yet it was like they were celebrating a 7th game of the Stanley Cup final with that win last night. Oh,
Tiger Williams style, too, with Pezzetta with the shootout winner.
All right. Anyway, we talked about that. I'm flipping around. I ended up watching some of the tennis. Bianca Andreescu was playing last night at the Miami Open. And in the she dropped the first set. Second set, she's won the first two games. She's in the middle of a rally, and I'm not sure exactly what. It was really, TSN had the coverage. It was kind of I don't know how to put this the right way. It didn't feel like it was like a side court presentation in terms of the broadcasters didn't appear to be regular broadcasters. So in other words, but anyway, the court was really mic'd up a lot that you could hear the players talking all the time. So anyway, she goes over on, it looks like her ankle at one point while she's attempting to get a ball. And man, I mean, the screams that she let, like it was. There haven't been many times I've been at sports events where players have been injured, and
you just want to change the channel because it's.
But I couldn't because I was kind of I was kind of waiting for some medical personnel to get there to kind of but she's a very passionate player on the court, right? She's yelling at herself all the time, like she's kind of like Chapo that way. She's very emotional on the court, and she was. Very emotional for a long period of time. Like she was, and I think part of it was the pain. And there was I haven't seen an update. There wasn't one last night. I haven't seen one this morning other than she had to, eventually they got her up after about 10 minutes or so, put her into a wheelchair, and she was wheeled off. It looks like a left, I believe it's an ankle, it might be an Achilles. But obviously she was in a ton of pain, but she's screaming and it goes on and on and on. And I think part of it was pain, but I think part of it is just frustration because her family is there. She has been injured so much since she won the U.S. Open in 2019. Like, we're 3.5 years now. It feels like she hasn't played for most of that time. Part of it is pandemic-related, and she took some time off. But part of it is because she's had shoulder injuries and leg injuries, and now this looks like another significant injury. So I think part of it was just born out of sheer frustration over, oh my God, what? I think at one point she said, what have I done to deserve this?
Yeah, what right? now? Yeah. What's next? Yeah. Why this now? And absolutely, it's a combination of the injury and having to go through this again. You kind of get the understanding that she knew that this is another bad one, and this is going to keep me out from doing what I love to do again for a long, long time. And you see the reaction of her family on the face. Mom's crying. She's in shock. And she finally gets up and hobbles on one leg and hugs her opponent. You can see they're consoling each other because her opponent was in tears too. Her reaction to Andreescu.
Well, it was, you know, I don't watch every tennis tournament. It was we haven't seen anything. I don't want to say ever, but I don't remember seeing anything that significant an injury, or what appeared to be that significant an injury from a player in a long time.
Well, I think what helps too is what you're talking about is just how much audio the TV picked up.
Like the stadium is it's only
down.
Half empty or half full. So the sound is just sort of it's echoing. Mm-hmm. And as I said, it was extra mic'd up because I don't know if the commentators were even there or they're watching on TV, but it wasn't, I'll call it a normal sort of a Grand Slam presentation. So you could hear everything she was saying. And again, this like it felt like you're watching a horror movie.
It just seems since winning the U.S. Open, it's just been a stop and starts for her and her career. And this is another stop for her. You hope for the best. It looks like it was pretty bad, and it's going to keep her out for a while. And it's going to be a long recovery, but you hope for the best.
Yeah, did not look good for Bianca Andreescu, unfortunately. So she quite obviously had to retire from her match. Jay in Stittsville, throwing some shade at you, Hammer. Come on, Hammer.
What?
Pretty early for Blue Jay whining. No. When are we going to hear all about the tough division they're in? Go Bo Sox or anyone who's playing the Jays. And that's from...
Is that AJ?
Jay in Stittsville, who is not a Jays fan.
It's just a crazy way to just start out west. That's all. If you're going to start on the road, and I understand you want to get the renovations done and completed at the Rogers Center, just start out on the West Coast with three series. Get one of those trips out of the way. Not go out there for three games.
Hammer, you're so right. I hate the new schedule set up in MLB. Who cares if they play every team? What I wouldn't mind...
The DHs in the NL has just opened this up.
Yeah. What I wouldn't mind is I'd rather you play the predominant games against your league, against your division firstly, and then your league. I don't know that we need to go home and away every year against the other league. How about home 1 year, away the next? So
that makes a lot of sense.
There are 15 teams in the National League, right? There's 30 teams in baseball. I always get this. Yes, 30 teams. So, all right, so you're playing.
Yep.
So, I don't know if the math works out because it's not 16. You're going to play seven series at home and eight on the road 1 year and then the opposite the next year. So maybe, I don't know, in terms of fairness, whether that exactly works.
It just seems like you're playing a lot of teams that don't have a large impact. That don't have a large impact on your division standings. And trying to make the playoffs. Like, there's no crossover here between the AL and the NL, so there's really no reason to be playing that many games against the National League.
Feels like, so it's down to 9 within the division now? Because it was 19, and it always felt like 19 was just a little too much.
I know
much.
It's down substantially.
Yes.
I think it might be 12.
12 feels like the right number.
Might be 12, but still.
Two home series, two away series against your interdivision teams, and then go from there. That's probably how we should do it. Anyway, all starts on Thursday. We're going to have Keegan Matheson, our friend from MLB.com, who covers the Blue Jays, is going to join us. He's going to be in St. Louis on Thursday for the show.
Yes, he will be.
Okay, all right. Look forward to talking to him. Get all caught up on the Blue Jays through spring training and the team that will take to the field on Thursday.
He tweeted out that he's going home. He was at the Tampa Bay airport waiting for his flight. I guess Tampa Bay has a really nice bar there. So he was waiting for his flight, had tweeted out a nice picture of a delicious beverage, it looked like. Maybe a scotch and soda, maybe just a straight up, looked like a triple that he was going to embark on. Now, he's a good Maritimer.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was going home, doing some laundry, and then heading out to St. Louis. So I think he's out to St. Louis tomorrow.
Going to fly from Tampa to Toronto
for
a day to do laundry?
Yep.
Do they not have laundromats in Tampa and or St. Louis?
Well, I'm guessing, too, he needs some pants. I'm guessing the clothes that he had in Florida.
Do they not have stores?
I think they've got stores, but when you've got shorts at home and pants at home and pants you like, You're not just going to go and buy some pants just because you're heading to St. Louis and Kansas City.
Have your pants that are in Toronto shipped to you. Your pants.
Be really careful.
Time to end the show. Time to end the show with I shipped my pants.
Like that you did that slowly.
Thank you. All right. Thank you very much for listening, everybody, and all the feedback. Been one of those days. One of those days. Stand by. The fun and frivolity will not end for the next 4 hours because it is Steve Lloyd, Chris Stevenson, and Kenny Walsh. Take you through more 67s tickets as part of our 67s all-day playoff ticket giveaway.